This is episode 142 of UFO Encounters. In this episode, I'm reading from Jonathan Kaplan's book, Not for Disclosure, UFOs, the World's Best Kept Secret. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. And when reading these books, I always find such amazing information that never makes it into the podcast. And here, I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record this extract, and the author kindly said yes. So I'm going to be reading from chapter 11, and this is titled, What the Octogenarians Revealed. And this is what Jonathan has written. Another whistleblower was June Crane. She had spent her working life in a much less glamorous job than either Eshed or Corso. She had been a clerk, stenographer. But she had been employed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base between 1942 and 1952. She felt bound by her oath of secrecy, but when, in 1997, she reached the age of 72, she felt more strongly that the public deserved to be told the truth. She had been infuriated when she learned of the US Air Force publication that year entitled The Roswell Report, Case Closed, and the explanation that the Roswell crash had actually been a downed high-altitude balloon carrying anthropomorphic dummies. The report was a lie, she said, and she felt that it was an insult to me. Crane had been at Wright-Patterson and had learned firsthand about the Roswell crash, as well as about two other UAP crashes. She had handled the remarkable and indestructible tin foil which Mac Brazel had found on his ranch, which completely straightened itself out when crumpled. A Lieutenant Rose had shown it to her and told her that it's a piece of a spaceship. It was as light as a feather, she said. She was also told by her friend Clarence, who was a master sergeant, that he had flown in with two of the dead alien bodies from Roswell in ice boxes to Wright-Patterson during the night. A master sergeant flies with special cargoes and has charge of the plane. They had then been placed in a freezer locker in a hangar under the charge of the Aero Med Lab. I didn't see them because nobody was allowed to, she said. She had known Clarence well and had been to his wedding, but could not now remember his surname. The key thing, said Crane, that the scientists at Wright-Patterson wanted to know was what was the propulsion system. As with so many others who had secret information which they had kept for so long, a chance encounter had prompted Crane to reconsider her duty of silence. She had attended a lecture on UAPs at Ocean Shores Library in Washington State, where she listened to James Clarkson, who had been a military police investigator. James later was able to tape her recollections of working at Wright-Patterson just after the Roswell crash. The interview was conducted 1 year before she died in August 1998. In order to verify her account, she produced her Air Force personnel records from the time. She also signed a conveyance of all rights in her story, stating that she had no expectation of any remuneration for myself or my estate. Robert Hastings is included in this chapter, although, like June Crane, he has not quite become an octogenarian. He also does not fall within the category of those who worked for or with government agencies and learned of classified material regarding UAPs from his employment. His principal work had been researching, writing, and speaking about the presence of UAPs over nuclear facilities, and he has interviewed many veterans regarding UAP incursions and interactions at nuclear weapons sites. His father was a member of the United States Air Force and was one of the witnesses to UAPs appearing over missile silos at Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana in March 1967. But in 2019, he decided to risk his reputation as a well-known researcher with his publishers, readers, and veteran sources by revealing his own undisclosed experiences with the phenomenon. By then, his book, UFOs and Nukes, had been acclaimed as a primary source on the UAP interest in our nuclear capability. In Confession, which Hastings wrote with Dr. Bob Jacobs, Hastings, in the first half of the book, reveals for the first time those experiences. Quote, several friends and acquaintances have urged me not to write this book. They are undoubtedly correct in saying that there will be negative consequences for me personally and for my reputation as a reliable researcher who models his work on principles integral to investigative journalism. Nevertheless, after much hesitation and reflection, I've concluded that I must confess something I have long hidden from the public. I have had unsought interactions with what I have come to believe are non-human intelligences. Now that I am getting on in years, I have belatedly decided that some value may derive from my going public with my personal paranormal encounters. Will some or all of the people worldwide who have followed my research recoil from the claims I make in this book and begin to wonder whether anything that I have written in the past has merit? Yes, I suspect there will indeed be challenging consequences for me relating to this undertaking. Nevertheless, I think that it is the right thing to do. His account could have been included in the chapter on abductions, but it comes here because it is a personal perspective on the phenomenon from a well-placed expert of advancing years who has felt compelled to disclose a missing but important part of the story. Hastings' conclusion is that he was chosen to write about the concerns of NHIs regarding the nuclear threat. Although bizarre and at times terrifying, he writes, I have concluded that these personal experiences have been integral to whatever contributions I have made towards other humans' understanding of the nuclear weapons-related UFO incidents. He perceives that his experiences and interactions with the phenomenon began the process whereby he was later to write his book. He describes a series of events from a young child until the age of about 63, during which he believes that he either encountered beings or UAPs. Strangely, none of the events were hugely significant to him at the time, but cumulatively and retrospectively, he now sees them as a prompt for his work in the subject. They range from half-recollections of small beings to missing time and to sightings of occasional orb or disc. They are backdrops rather than significant standalone events. He says that his first perception of encountering NHIs was in the summer of 1952 when he was aged 2. He understands that he was taken from a family lunch table by small greys into a field outside and then, he presumes, into a craft. The other diners were literally suspended as if a pause button had been pressed. While having any reliable recollection age 2 is perhaps suspect, he also states that his mother was abducted in 1934 when she was age 17. He had another experience while on a camping trip in the Manzano Mountains in August 1988. He cannot recall this in any detail, save for the lights of an approaching craft. His last experience was on New Year's Eve 2014, when he awoke to observe the presence of a small being with a rounded cranium in his hotel room. He says that he was always aware when they had come to take him. He has also seen UAPs of different varieties on 8 occasions, varying from a silver rotating sphere above his home in San Luis Valley, Colorado, to a metallic double convex disc. None of the incidents he describes is sufficiently reliable or detailed in itself, but the repetitious nature of the whole seems significant, especially in the context of Hastings ultimately concluding that they have assisted his work in the subject. Interestingly, of the many veteran government employees he has interviewed who have worked at nuclear sites, 6 have told him of their own paranormal or abduction experiences after UAPs have been seen over their facilities. One was Captain Robert Salas, who was present as a missile launch officer at Malmstrom Air Force Base in March 1967, when 16 Minuteman 1 missiles simultaneously became non-operational. The importance of those with knowledge about phenomenon coming forward late in life cannot be overestimated. Official disclosure is still very probably a long way off, but the cases in this chapter illustrate that there is a growing climate of personal disclosure and a feeling that there is a responsibility to add to the body of evidence in the pursuit of public awareness. In this episode, I was reading from Jonathan Kaplan's book, Not for Disclosure, UFOs, the World's Best Kept Secret. And my book, titled Aspects of Alien Abduction, is on Amazon. and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.